Okay. Got the mic all set up here with the nice little spit. The spit guard. Reggie, are you ready? Oh, look at you. Back to the trough. Back to the submarine sandwich. What happened? Last week you had the Impossible Burger from Burger King. No? Yeah? Thumbs up for that? Yeah? Look at you, Mr. Environmentally Aware. I don't know if nutritionally it's any better for you, but certainly the whole idea is that it's made of plants, right? So you're not, either killing or an animal. At the same time, we're not herding them, H-E-R-D-E, meaning that, there's a lot of talk about, cows expelling gas, which has some impact on the climate, believe it or not. So look at you. But now, look at you. You're right back with your Italian sub from Subway. Yeah, look at him chewing away. Just make sure you take a look at the levels while I'm talking, okay? Those are okay. Can you give me a thumbs up in between chews? Okay, thank you. Yeah, he's pointing at me. Talent is ready, as usual. Always ready. When the mic is hot, so is Elton Jim. All right. All right. All right. That's my Tony Bennett. Yeah, let's swing. Thank you, Ravinia. Okay, let's get going here. We're saving. We got to save the good stuff for the actual podcast. We haven't even officially started it yet. This is all the behind the scenes stuff. Doesn't officially start until I count it down and play the opening music. This is just a little, behind the scenes banter. Like the outtakes of from the Beatles session at Abbey Road. Hello, Paul. Come on, let's start going already. It's almost lunchtime. It's almost time for tea. All right, are we ready? Yes. Good. Three S's, star, smile, and strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday it's posted there or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Whatever platform, whatever website, wherever you find your favorite podcast, we are there. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on that platform and also rate this podcast. And perhaps even most importantly, don't forget to tell your friends. If you like what you've been hearing, then podcasting is a word of mouth kind of industry. So by all means, tell a friend, send them a link, talk it up. Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, new episode is there for your binging pleasure. So we thank you for your downloading, for your scrolling, for your clicking, whatever it is you do to find and listen to us on a regular or hopefully weekly basis. Your loyalty is much appreciated. And if you like what you hear on the WGNplus.com website, I have a landing page. You go to the entertainment section. Go to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and there you will find all previous 175 episodes. Can you believe it? 175 episodes in the can, which means that this can only be one thing. This is episode 176. And we welcome you. Today, I'd like to podcastly pontificate. And do a callback, if you will. Callback in the business means that you refer to something that you've already referred to previously. It's a callback. Just trying to, give you a little insight to the broadcasting lingo. For instance, as I said earlier, before the podcast started, when the microphone's on, it's hot. Okay? It's hot. When you there's a little device that I guess a switch that goes up and down, which controls the volume of whatever is going on the air, the microphone, if you play music or whatever, commercial, whatever it would be. That has many names. It's called a pot, like pot me up, make it hotter, or a gain, because you gain volume. So the pot or the gain, that's what that little slide switch is. You'll see that when you ever see, a mixing board, perhaps in a recording studio on a TV show, and they're talking about an album or something, and they'll show them kind of slide that up. That's called a gain or a pot. Okay. What else can I tell you about? The microphone is hot. That's a gain. Q is when you hear something that's not on the air yet, but you get it ready for the air. So you cue it up to the spot you wanted. You used to do the cue when people would play records. You'd cue the record up to where the music started, so you can blend them in. That used to be called a segue, when one song would blend into another. It just goes to show you how it doesn't take much to impress a disc jockey. If you made a nice segue, if you were able to blend the ending of one song with the beginning of another, and almost it felt seamless because the two songs are very similar, at least the openings were, oh my gosh, in the DJ world, that was really cool. Hey, nice segue. Oh, it's such a silly business. But it's fun. So there's, if you want to go to parties this weekend and pass around some broadcasting DJ lingo, the levels. When I ask Reggie, the producer engineer, if the levels are okay, that means that how strong the volume is while we're recording this, and you've obviously seen those little needles in a recording place, in a recording studio or somewhere, where the needles are bouncing and there's the little red spot. You want to make sure that it every so often bounces a little in the red, but not too much. You sort of want it right on the fringe of that, because then it gets too distorted. So those are the levels. So we've got a hot mic, we've got levels, we've got the pot or the gain. Spots are basically another name for commercials. So look at you. We talked about segues. So look at you. You can walk right in now to any broadcasting studio and sound like you know exactly what you're talking about. That's a little broadcasting 101. That's free of charge, by the way. So is this whole podcast. I got on this subject because I was talking about callbacks. That's another term, a callback, referring to something that we talked about before. Didn't talk about anything about the callback. The callback here is not about something I talked about just today, but I don't know, 3 or 4 episodes ago. Go back to that landing page I told you about and you'll see it. I was talking about how Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr, formerly of the Beatles, got together at a Paul McCartney concert for a couple of songs, and how I had hoped or wished that at this time in their careers, Paul 77, Ringo 79, wouldn't it be great if they just came together, the come together tour, if you will? Thank you very much. Once again, Beatles, that's free. That's gratis from me, from an Elton Jim to you, if you wanted to use that, Paul and Ringo. The Come Together Tour. Shouldn't Paul and Ringo tour together at least one last time? Just let us see them on the stage together. How great would that be? Recently celebrating the 50th anniversary of their final recorded album together, Abbey Road, with a big super deluxe box set edition with 40 songs and outtakes and demos and some studio banter like you hear before the podcast starts here. Where do you think I got the idea, gang? and as well as a remix of the great Abbey Road album, which aside from Sgt. Pepper, which most people feel is the best Beatle album, maybe the most impactful Beatle album, a lot of Beatle fans don't really necessarily think Sgt. Pepper is the best. Many people believe Revolver is the best, which was just before Sgt. Pepper, or Abbey Road, which is clearly the most pop-oriented album that they had put out in several years. In 67, Sgt. Pepper was very experimental for its time, which is why it's so influential and so popular. The White Album, which came out in 66, was a much more raw and certainly stripped down and less experimental and less kind of studio gimmicks, which I think John Lennon was a little tired of from Sgt. Pepper. So the White Album is a double album, and it's much more raw and just straightforward. And at the final album that they recorded, even though Abbey Road was recorded last, it wasn't released last. It was recorded last, but Let It Be, which was recorded before Abbey Road, was not released until 1970, whereas Abbey Road was released in 1969. So it's an interesting little shift there. Even though Abbey Road was the last Beatle album that they recorded together, it was not necessarily the last Beatle album that was ever released. Little tidbit for you there. But yeah, that celebrates 50 years this year, 1969 in September. And Abbey Road is probably the most, in that string, the most pop-oriented and melodic and really a significant, a strong and emotional and, as I said before, very, it's a group effort, which coming off of the White Album, which was a very turbulent time for the band, it seemed as if they were all back in sync again. And one of the, in terms of songs, you've got George Harrison really making a statement for himself. Here Comes the Sun and Something, two of his best songs, both on Abbey Road. And then we've got Paul McCartney's Oh Darling. We've got John Lennon's Because and She's So Heavy and Maxwell's Silver Hammer. And then, of course, on side two, the great medley of songs put together that end with The End. And the great Ringo drum solo and little snippets like She Came In Through the Bathroom Window and Polythene Pam and Mean Mr. Mustard and The Sun King and You Never Give Me Your Money. I really do like Abbey Road. It is a great album. I think it might be my favorite. I do like Sgt. Pepper. There's no question about that. And I do like Revolver. Actually, in terms of a full Beatle album, my favorite Beatle album may be the one that came even before Revolver, which was Rubber Soul. I really like Rubber Soul. But in terms of a complete full album that is produced well, so many melodic songs, so many great Beatle moments. Paul McCartney's vocal on Oh Darling alone is worth price of admission. And also, don't forget, let's not forget Come Together, great John Lennon composition. So, yeah, Abbey Road, tough to beat. And, of course, you got the amazing, iconic cover of them crossing Abbey Road right outside the Abbey Road EMI studios. I've been there a few times. First trip to London on my honeymoon almost 30 years ago, one of the first stops I made was to go to St. John's Wood and stand outside of Abbey Road. Now you can go in, I believe there's tours, but 30 years ago it was still kind of off limits of the public. But I was there, wrote my name on the outside brick. One of the first stops when we went to London. Always remember that. And then also went to Liverpool years later and stood outside of Strawberry Fields. So came full circle to some extent. Always been a Beatle fan. So when I was talking about the Beatles and the two surviving Beatles getting together, I was also talking briefly about how important it is to, at this point in time, how important it is to maybe go back and start to see some of these bands who are getting a little older and who might not be around much longer. And I was saying how I'm really going to make an effort to see some of these bands that I haven't seen, or I want to, I maybe have seen many years ago, but want to see them one last time. In the podcast just before, in number 175, I was telling you how I went to Branson, Missouri, and saw Jim Stafford, who is 75 years old. Not a huge name by any means, kind of a one-hit wonder from the 70s, but I always enjoyed him as a singer and a songwriter and a performer. One thing I didn't mention about Jim Stafford that I forgot to mention that I will mention now is that when he was in high school, he was in a band with the great Gram Parsons. And if anybody knows anything about Gram Parsons and the evolution of country music and country rock music, Gram Parsons sadly died when he was 26 years old. Kind of a troubled kid, but he was responsible for, in a great part, the melding of country and rock and roll. He was in the Byrds, later in the Flying Burrito Brothers, and then on his own. He wrote the song Love Hurts. You may have heard that Nazareth did many years ago, as well as Roy Orbison. That was him with Emmylou Harris. And he went to school with and knew Gram Parsons. So that was an interesting little tidbit that I learned after seeing Jim Stafford. But Jim Stafford, as I said, 75 years old. And so I was saying when I was talking about the Beatles getting together because of their ages, Paul 77 and Ringo 79, that, you know, they might not be around either touring anymore, or they may not sadly be around at all. We just had Rick Ocasek of the Cars, 75 years old. I didn't think he was that old, but, and that was a band from the late 70s and early 80s, and he's passed away. So thankfully, a lot of these baby boomers, 60s and 70s performers are still on the road, and their fans are still going and selling them out. And I think if you have a chance to see some of these favorites, either if you've never seen them before, or if you've seen them before and it's been a while and you want to see them one more time, don't wait. And I learned the lesson. And this, it, not only was it the Paul McCartney and Ringo kind of coupling for Ringo or for at a Paul McCartney concert recently, but really struck this home for me was the death a couple of years ago of Tom Petty, only 68 years old. I was always a Tom Petty fan. I've seen him a few times in concert over the years. Always enjoyed his music, always enjoyed his performances, loved him with the Wilburys and his solo albums, and obviously with the Heartbreakers. I saw him be the backup band for Bob Dylan. That was a great tour in the mid-80s. I believe that was 85 or 86. And so they were doing this 40th anniversary tour, and it came through Chicago here, and I didn't go to see them, and I don't know why. And I said to myself, well, the next time I'm going to see Tom Petty, I've got to see him. And then, tragically, right after that tour, days after, maybe a week or so after the last show at the Hollywood Bowl, Tom Petty died. He was in severe pain. He had a broken hip for that entire, you know, 50-date tour. And he was taking some painkillers to get through each show. And clearly, I think he was going to finally get this hip taken care of because he wanted to do that tour. And sadly, he just took a few too many painkillers and passed away, to the shock of so many people. And that really woke me up to say, wow, you know, you never know. We've lost, you know, Prince a couple years ago. And it does seem that the rock and roll lifestyle, and I've been saying this for the last 5 or 6 or 7 years, when a lot of major people have passed away in their mid-60s to early 70s, is that rock and roll, as well as life, does have an expiration date. And a rock and roll lifestyle, many of these guys have been passing away in their mid to late 60s because of the hard living that they did early on. And their bodies seem to deteriorate quicker than others because they really put their bodies through the ringer, through alcoholism or drugs or just the constant stress and the crazy lifestyle on the road, in hotels, of the rock and roll world. So I've sort of made it my little bucket list, if you will, or whatever you want to call it, that when there is somebody that I really like if they're out there touring now, in the past I've said, oh, I've seen them before, I don't need to see them, you know. But now as they're coming around, I'm starting to say, you know what, let me go see them that one last time if they're really a favorite. And I saw something on the internet I've been saying this for several years already. I've said within the next 15, this is, I say 5 years ago, I was saying, you know, in the next 15 years, many of the rock legends will either have retired because they just don't have, you know, the ability to perform. We've seen already some people retiring because of that, like Neil Diamond isn't performing anymore. It sounds like Brian Wilson canceled a recent tour. And if, you know, Mick Jagger had to postpone the Rolling Stones current tour because it was discovered he had a heart valve problem. And look at the shape that guy's in. At least outwardly, right? So there's a mortality that is creeping up. As I said, we just saw Rick Ocasek pass away from the Cars, and that's a, you know, late 70s, early 80s band. So you've got some of these other people from the 60s, like your McCartneys and your Ringos. You know, Bob Dylan is 78. I saw this online. Someone else wrote a story about this and kind of listed some of the ages of some of these great baby boomer, you know, rock and roll era performers and the ages that they're at. And in another 10 years, I don't care what kind of shape you're in, you know, between 75 and 85, you know, reality sets in. So Bob Dylan is 78. Paul Simon is 77. Paul McCartney is 77. Art Garfunkel is 77. Wouldn't it be great if Simon and Garfunkel got together for one last time? I know they can't stand each other, but wow, wouldn't it be great one last time? I saw them in one of their tours about 10 years or so ago, and it was great to see them on stage. It really was. I'm glad I got a chance to see that. Carole King is 77. As I said before, Brian Wilson, 77. Mick Jagger is 76. Keith Richards is 75. Jimmy Page of Rolling of Led Zeppelin, 75. Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin, 71. People would love to see Led Zeppelin get back together one last time. And I know Jimmy Page has wanted to, but you know, those, I don't blame Robert Plant. It's got to be a difficult situation. I'm sure there's some tension between the band members because they know they could make a ton of money and really put a nice, you know, period on their legacy. But those Led Zeppelin songs are not easy to sing. They're all screechers and screamers. And I think that Robert Plant just is being very honest with himself and saying, I can't hit those notes anymore, and I don't want to do that if I can't do that on a nightly basis. And sure, they can have people in the background, younger people hitting those high notes for them, but then that's not Led Zeppelin. And even though for many people that would be good enough anyway, just to see Robert Plant and Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones and perhaps Jason Bonham, John Bonham's son, and they did a concert about maybe 10 years or so ago in London. But it was a one-off show, and Robert Plant's voice sounded good because it was a one-off show. But I think he's just basically being honest and saying, I can't do that every night. I can't do that every other night. I can't do that every four nights. So he's refrained from it, but I'm sure that the fans would love to see, even if they were enhancing the vocals in some way, just to see Jimmy Page and Robert Plant on stage one more time, but who knows if we'll see that. Ray Davies from the Kinks is 75. I just saw Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend, the Who, remaining members of the Who. Daltrey is 75, Townsend is 74. Roger Waters and David Gilmour of Pink Floyd. Roger Waters is 75, David Gilmour is 73. Thankfully, I saw Roger Waters several years ago when he brought his Wall tour, and it was amazing. And I've seen Pink Floyd, so thankfully I've seen David Gilmour perform, but I have never seen Roger Waters and David Gilmour as Pink Floyd perform, because they haven't performed together since, you know, on a tour since 1980 when they did the Wall. Rod Stewart is 74. Eric Clapton is 74. Neil Young is 73. Debbie Harry of Blondie is 74. Van Morrison is 73. Brian Ferry of Roxy Music is 73. Elton John, of course, 72, turned almost 73 in March. Don Henley of the Eagles is 72. James Taylor is 71. Jackson Brown is 70. Bruce Springsteen just turned 70. Billy Joel is 70. So if these and many other of those classic rock bands who are still out there performing, so you still can't see them, you might want to see them. And after I saw this Paul McCartney thing, I just said, and Ringo getting together, I said to myself, you know what, I'm going to make an effort, a concerted effort now to really see some of my favorite bands, even if I haven't seen them in a long time, I've never seen them. I want to see them now. And so I just wanted to give you a little update, because I wasn't joking. No procrastination here. You gotta do it. As I said, time is passing by, and you never know what's going to happen to those folks or yourself, right? I mean, I know that's a big reality sandwich to chew on, but it's true. So in the last several months, I have seen some of my favorites that have come through town, or I've traveled to see them to make sure that I do see them at least one last time. And there hopefully will be more that I will want to see, and they will be available as time goes on. I have, like, some of that list. I mean, I have seen Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan's a tough one, because I've seen Bob Dylan three or four times, and in the last 20 years, Bob Dylan's voice has really degenerated. It kind of is gravelly and croaky. He never had a great voice to begin with. But now it's kind of gravelly and croaky. He doesn't really play the guitar much anymore. I think his hands, it's difficult. He plays the piano more. He rarely talks to the crowd. He rarely lifts his head up to talk to the crowd, to even acknowledge the crowd. And one of the things about his concerts, which his fans and his critics are always rave about, but I think if you're a casual fan, I think you have to go out into a concert of Bob Dylan's and come out scratching your head, is that they give Bob Dylan now credit for reimagining his songs, which means he completely shifts the melodies and the time sequences and everything to the point where you really, and given his voice, which is not that clear, sometimes you don't even know what songs he's singing. Now, that may make it interesting for the longtime fan, or interesting for the band itself to do something different. But if you're a casual fan who just wants to see Bob Dylan and wants to hear It Ain't Me, Babe, or I Want You, or Like a Rolling Stone, or Positively 4th Street, or some of these great Dylan songs, you want to hear them and recognize them and enjoy them for what you remember. Is it nostalgic? Yes, but that's where we're at now. When you've got a performer that's in his late 70s, that's what they are. The Rolling Stones can say everything they want, but every song they play is from the 60s, to the mid-70s. There's no new songs being played. These are all old songs. That's what they're all playing. So they are nostalgia acts. They're huge. They're big productions, but they're all nostalgia acts, and there's nothing wrong with that. At this point, that's what their fans want to hear. They want to hear those songs one last time, and they want to see their heroes perform them. And, with Bob Dylan, it's a tough call, because you want to see a legend, right? But then you go to the concert, and you're scratching your head. What song was that? And somebody tells you, well, that was Positively 4th Street. What? How was that? I didn't hear anything. That didn't sound like that. Well, that's supposedly, the great artistry. I don't buy that. If you want to do that, Bob Dylan, that's fine. Do that in your basement. If you're going to charge people $150, that's the gig. That's the payback. They give you $200 a night out of their pocket. If they go with their wife or their friends or their girlfriend, they spend $400, then your responsibility, if you're that kind of an act, if you're in your 20s or 30s, I say, you know what, be as adventurous and off the wall as you want to be. But I believe if you're at this point, if you're one of the classic rock artists and you're in your 70s and almost 80s, I think you owe it to your audience to play those songs the way they remember them. Because that's the contract. I'm spending the money to see you. I should be able to get back the entertainment that I expect. I think that's only fair. And why wouldn't you want people to revel and enjoy and scream and sing along with you at this point in your career, if you're a 70 or 80-year-old performer? Wouldn't you? Don't you want to feel that communal experience of 20,000 people singing your words back to you and looking at their faces and seeing the enjoyment and the energy and the excitement that they're getting from that, as opposed to changing it for your own sake and maybe impressing two or three music critics out there? No, sorry guys. I don't buy that. I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan. I've got every one of his albums dating back to his first album. But I haven't seen him perform in, say, 20-some years. And the reason why is the last time I saw him perform when he started this never-ending tour was when he started this whole idea of reworking these songs to the point that you couldn't even recognize them. It was the very beginning of this, and so you were not really ready for it. And I remember all of a sudden halfway through the song realizing he was singing like a Rolling Stone. And I didn't recognize the song. His greatest, perhaps, recorded moment for Bob Dylan is like a Rolling Stone. It was influential. It was monumental. It's a milestone. It's the one song that you want to hear Bob Dylan sing. And he changed it so much that I don't think anyone in the audience knew what it was. And after that, and that was several other songs like that, and I said, sorry, but that's not for me. I want to hear that song at least some way that it doesn't have to be note for note perfect, but it should have the same melody. It should be recognizable. And that's why I'm torn, because He's touring and he's 78 and he's still out there, and I'm so tempted to see him again because I'm such a fan. I would like to see him one more time, but then I know I would be kicking myself because I'd be sitting in there and saying, what was that? I mean, am I basically spending $150 or $100, whatever it is, to see him, to just physically sit in the same room and watch him? Is that what I'm paying for? Because if I'm not enjoying the music, if I'm not getting that kick, then is it really worth it? But at the same time, he's Bob Dylan, he's a legend. So I'm kind of torn on that, because he is touring this fall, and he's coming through Chicago here, and I don't know. I'm very torn. So we'll see about that. But I would like to see Bob Dylan, perhaps. But I've seen Paul McCartney this summer. I just saw Ringo Starr. I have seen Simon and Garfunkel perform. I have seen Carole King perform. I have seen Brian Wilson perform. I have seen the Stones perform. I haven't seen Robert Plant and Jimmy Page. I have seen the Kinks and Ray Davies perform. I just went to Madison Square Garden this summer and saw the members of The Who, Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend. As I said, I have seen Roger Waters and David Gilmour perform. Last summer, I saw Rod Stewart. I have seen Eric Clapton. I have seen Neil Young. I saw Van Morrison about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I've obviously seen Elton. I saw Don Henley with the Eagles as well as a solo artist, but I just saw Don Henley with the Eagles about 3 or 4 years ago. I've seen James Taylor many times, saw him about 3 or 4 years ago. I've seen Jackson Browne. I just saw Billy Joel this summer in Baltimore at Camden Yards. And obviously, I just saw Elton, and we'll be seeing him many times as long as he's performing. And good news is, in 2020, Bruce Springsteen is supposed to come back on the road. But I've just saw him perform solo in New York in his Broadway show. But I'm looking forward to certainly see him perform again. He just turned 70 in September, and looking forward to seeing him, hopefully, with the E Street Band in 2020. And in November, I'm going to be seeing Elvis Costello, who's one of my huge favorites, perform. So I'm doing my best here to see my favorites, because there's too many of them that I haven't seen or haven't seen in a long time, and I would like to see. And I have to say, an addendum to this is that not only is it important to see them because you want to, but I have to say, and this is, you know, it's unfortunate, but yes, Father Time does affect everyone. And I mentioned this briefly in the last podcast, and I'll bring it up again, but I went to see Jim Stafford, certainly not in the class of some of these people that I just read off, but it was always kind of a, like I said before, a one-hit wonder favorite of mine. And he's 75, and we went to see him in Branson, Missouri, at the Jim Stafford Theater, which was very kitschy and very cool. And I did bring him a rubber snake and a rubber spider for him to sing Spiders and Snakes too. And I did give it to him. But there were moments within the show, especially when he was talking and telling stories, that it was clear that there was a little memory issue happening, and he would, oh, I forgot. Oh, what are we doing? And he would talk to the band, and they would kind of prompt him. Now, when he performed, unbelievable the way the mind works. He's at 75. You should have seen his fingers just gliding over the guitar. He still is an amazing guitarist. The muscle memory is clearly there, and you know he knew all the lyrics, but there were moments that were a little, even uncomfortable, where there was just moments of silence. And if you're up on stage and there's about 30 seconds of silence, God forbid a minute of silence, it feels like 20 minutes. And you could see him struggling for the words or trying to remember something. So here's the other side of the coin. Go see these people, not only because, you know, they're getting on in years and they might not tour again, but you might want to see them because you never can count on another 2 years that all of their skills and their faculties are going to be there. And I was amazed to see this, and whether you could laugh it off or not, but I went to see The Who at Madison Square Garden, traveled to New York to see The Who. I always wanted to see them at Madison Square Garden. It's a classic venue. I love going to concerts there. And for many bands, it's their favorite venue. It's Elton John's favorite venue. It's The Who's favorite venue. Pete Townsend said it's their favorite venue to play. It's the first place they played in America. And so they, you know, or maybe at least in New York. But so it's a very important place. But there is a point, a couple of times. Now, Roger Daltrey's voice is as strong as you could expect for a 75-year-old. And I talked about Robert Plant having so many screaming songs with Led Zeppelin. Well, if you look at the Who catalog, there's just as many screamers that Roger Daltrey that sang in his prime, like Love Rain on Me or We Won't Get Fooled Again or Bob O'Reilly or some of those just, you know, screamers. And he's had some voice problems, and some of the notes aren't there as they used to be, and they're not held as long, but he certainly sounded better than I heard him in many years. But toward the end of the show, and he can't, even for insurance purposes, because his voice is so fragile, Roger Daltrey cannot perform two nights in a row. The insurance companies will not allow him, that insure the tours, they will not allow the Who to do two shows back to back. He's got to have a night off at least. And toward the end of the show, was almost a three-hour show. When he sang Love Rain on Me, which I don't know why you'd save that, such a huge, big, emotional and screaming song. I don't know why you'd save that for the end, but they did. And he was straining a little on it. But the most interesting part was Pete Townsend. During one of his solo songs, first of all, he totally lost his voice toward the beginning of the show. Right before he's going to sing one of his solo songs that he sings, Eminence Front, he was croaking. It was almost hilarious to hear him sing it. And his voice came back a little, but he doesn't sing all that many songs. But he does sing some background stuff, but he was croaking. His voice was, it went. And he said, oh my gosh, I apologize. I need some lozenges or something. He was talking to the crew. I need some lozenges because I just lost my voice. Just before he's about to sing Eminence Front. And that was the beginning of the show. But later on, and his brother Simon is in the band now. And so he and his brother Simon were, it was a song from Quadrophenia. I believe it was Drowned. And it was just him and his brother, and they were both playing it together. And, you know, he was singing it, Pete singing it, and they're both playing acoustic guitars. And suddenly, and I was close enough to see that he turned and looked at his brother, because he just kept strumming and kept strumming. And the brother was looking at him, and Pete was looking at his brother. And finally, he just looked at his brother Simon and said, I can't remember the next line. And then his brother sang the next verse, you know, sort of spoke the next verse. And then he said, oh, right. I don't know. Is that a memory issue? You know, the voices are going. Maybe some of the memory is beginning to go. It's 75. That's not uncommon. Yes, these guys were rock gods, but they're human. There is no such thing as a rock god, really. They are human beings. And age and declining skills affect everyone, no matter if you're a rock god or not. So I would say if you want to see some of these bands, go see them, because they may not be around much longer. And a new kick to this, because the funny thing is, about three or four episodes ago, I was saying how I actually believe that you may be seeing some of their best performances musically, because while they're older, they're not, most of them now are sober. They're not strung out on drugs or alcohol. And so you're really seeing the musicianship, their true musical talent, perhaps even more on display than you would have 30 or 40 years ago in their prime, because back then they were playing on pure emotion, on pure adrenaline, on pure youthful rebellion, as well as, you know, perhaps on alcohol and drugs. And now that they're sober, they're able to play their instrument with a clear head. And that was kind of my reason for saying, hey, you know what? Not only will you see them maybe one last time, but I would argue that you might see them play better than you've ever seen them play before, even when they were young. Well, that was before this summer, when I started to see some of these bands, and I started to see some of the physical effects that are happening. I saw Billy Joel. Billy Joel can't hit those high notes anymore. He does have some background singers sweetening the vocals when there are some of the high notes, like on a song like Innocent Man. He can't hit those anymore. And I did notice, even with Billy Joel, great performer, always a crowd-pleasing performer, still can play the piano with great proficiency and great showmanship. But I also noticed that, you know, most of him, you know, he's 70 and his band members are close to that age too. I just did notice that while they were sharp and they were tight as a unit, the songs just seemed to go, the pace was just, it seemed to be like a beat or so slower, which Makes sense. They're 70 years old. I saw Mark Knopfler. I'll mention some of the bands I've seen. I just mentioned I saw Ringo this summer, Billy Joel, Jim Stafford, The Who, Sting, who was very good. Obviously, Elton, not just because I'm a big fan. I'm still so impressed. He seems playing the piano. He seems better than ever. It's amazing. Physically, when he stands up to bow or walk across the stage, he looks every bit of his 72 years old. But when he sits down at that piano and starts to sing and especially play the piano, it's as if he's 20 years old again. It's really something to see. And that tour will be bopping around the country and around the world. If you haven't seen Elton, this is his farewell tour, so you should see him. So one of my favorite bands is Dire Straits, the great Dire Straits, who many people will know either from the song Sultans of Swing from the late 70s or obviously in the mid 80s, their huge album Money for Nothing song, and the album Brothers in Arms, and other songs like Walk of Life you may know. And to me, they've got, their whole catalog is amazing, and many songs that they have were never even radio hits, but are amazing deep tracks and some of the great best albums of all, some of my all-time favorite albums. Please, if you're not aware of Dire Straits, I implore you to go back and discover albums like Making Movies from 1980 with some of the great songs like Romeo and Juliet and Tunnel of Love and Skate Away and Hand in Hand and Espresso Love, and the Love Over Gold album with Telegraph Road, and Love Over Gold, and It Never Rains, and Social Disease, and a very unheralded album of theirs called Communique, which has some great songs like Once Upon a Time in the West, and Where Do You Think You're Going, and Lady Rider, and Communique, and Portobello Bell. I just love Dire Straits. I love Mark Knopfler's singing voice. I love his very distinct and unique guitar sound and guitar playing. And while he doesn't really want to revisit his Dire Straits days as a band anymore, he still does tour. And I've continued to see him on and off. It's been maybe 15 years since the last time I saw him. But I still have bought many of his solo albums in those years since he's broke up with Dire Straits. But once again, I saw him coming to the area. I went to Milwaukee to see him at a beautiful theater called the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee. And I said, you know what? I want to see Mark Knopfler one time. He's been hinting that he may retire. And he just turned 70. And wow, when he walked out, I hadn't seen him in a while, when he walked out, he looked like somebody's old uncle. If you remember what Dire Straits looked like from the 80s, Mark Knopfler was tall and skinny with a headband, and now he's a little pudgy with a round head and all bald and kind of a big nose, and he's wearing glasses. Yeah, a little spare tire. But my gosh, he could still sing a song, and my gosh, can he still play a song on that guitar like few others can. So time is moving on, folks, and what I have noticed this summer, just this year, in seeing some of these older bands, while even 2 years ago, I saw some of these same people and said, wow, they're playing better than ever. When you get to be 74, 75, it only takes a year, and your talent or your faculties or your abilities do begin to degenerate. And as I said, I don't know if Pete Townsend's having memory issues, but he totally forgot the words to that song right in the middle. I don't know if Jim Stafford's having memory problems, but it was clear he was struggling to remember a few things and the set list and where he was in the show and some little stories. So all I can say is I may have to alter my original statement that you may be seeing some of their best performances ever. Maybe that's not the case, but There's no time like the present. So if you're a music fan and you're a fan of some of these iconic rock bands from the 60s and 70s, they're not getting any younger. And the reality sandwich is, neither are you. So if you want to see them, if you haven't seen them in a while, or you've never seen them and you want to see them, it may cost a little money to see them these days. You do have to pay for the privilege. But if you are a fan, don't hesitate, because you never know what might happen. And so I have to say, I'm kind of pleased so far with the lineup that I've seen, and hopefully some of my other favorites will be passing through town or being on the road, and I'll see what I can do to make sure I see them as well. As I said, I'm looking forward to seeing Elvis Costello coming up in November. Always been a favorite of mine. But yeah, I don't know. I've seen The Who now. I don't know if I need to see them again. That was a very good performance. It wasn't great. They were a little ragged, and even Pete Townsend admitted it to the crowd. We're a little ragged tonight. But at the same time, there were moments when Pete Townsend playing the guitar, it was just like it was 40 years ago. And you have to be impressed with Roger Daltrey looking as good as he does for 75 and still belting out those songs with as much passion and grit as he always did. Maybe sometimes the perfect notes weren't there, but you could see the effort was there. And the crowd just ate it up. So there's a special connection and special communal spirit that exists between those rock bands of the 60s and 70s and even the 80s and their audiences. There's not a lot of that goes on today as much, because music is a little more disposable than it used to be. Music used to be, more people are listening to music, but I don't know how much they are feeling it. I don't know how much they are absorbing it. They're listening to a lot of music, but I don't know if it's really seeping into their souls like music used to. And so that's when you go to one of these classic rock band concerts, you feel the connection between the crowd. The people are singing these songs together with the group on the stage like it's the last day on earth. There is a connection. There's an emotion. There's just a communal spirit. There's some magic. There's just some electricity and energy, because so many of those bands and so much of that music was so important to people's lives as they were growing up. Now, because music is so easy to get to, and it, as I said, it's almost disposable. You can just hear it anywhere and listen to whatever you want. It's less communal. Before, we used to listen to music more as a group, as people. You'd be listening to the same radio stations, and you'd go to those same concerts, and now people are listening to whatever they want, whenever they want, and so it's less communal with some of the younger bands of today. But it's great to see musicians who are real musicians, who still can play an instrument, and who still have that passion, and it's great to be a part of that crowd and see that they, in that moment, still have those passions too. I don't know what the history or what the future of rock and roll is, but it certainly had an amazing run for the last 50 years. And for those of us who love rock and roll, it is a part of our lives. It is in our blood system. It is in our souls and in our hearts. And people say, why do you see Elton John so many times? Or why do you see Bruce Springsteen so many times? Or why do you keep going to these concerts? And it's because I still get goosebumps. There was a moment at the Who concert. At the beginning of the show, they did some selections from the great album Tommy. And for me, this may have been the highlight of the show. And it came early on in the show, in fact. But the last song on Tommy is the song We're Not Gonna Take You. We're Not Gonna Take It. And there's a refrain at the end, which is very triumphant. And as I said before, this communal thing. And it's just, when they sang that, and 20,000 people at Madison Square Garden were singing along to it at the top of their lungs, and it's such a triumphant refrain and an anthem, I got chills. I almost started to cry. And it's that great line in that song. Listening to you, I get the heat. Following you, I climb the mountain. I get excitement at your feet. Right behind you, I get the music. Gazing at you, I get the heat. Everybody was singing those words, and it was magical. It was what rock and roll was all about. In that moment, I was so glad that I made the trip to New York, and I was sitting in that place and experiencing that at least one more time, because that's what rock and roll is all about. And that's why I keep going, and that's why I pass on to you that if music means that to you, if there is an artist or a group out there that means that much to you and they're still out there playing, you owe it to yourself and to them to share it that one last time. Because music really does touch you in ways that you don't even realize it until it touches you. And as I've said, I'll keep going as long as I keep getting those goosebumps. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. New episode is posted at WGNplus.com or on every Monday or wherever you get your favorite podcast on a regular basis. And wherever that may be, please subscribe. Please rate this podcast. And by all means, if you like what you hear, pass it on. Tell it with your friends. Word of mouth is always the best advertising. And thank you once again for downloading, clicking, scrolling, whatever it is you do to find us on a regular basis. Your loyalty is much, much appreciated. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.